I lost my rag after about 5 minutes and went, fuck off. And everyone turned around and looked at me. And I was like, none
Yes.
of you have looked at the fact that this man has literally just poked in my face because he's drunk and he wants my attention for nearly 5 minutes now. But when I tell him to fuck off, it's like, oh. And he was almost like offended. He was like, oh,
It speaks.
it speaks.
Welcome to Women Are Mad, where we invite women to bring their anger into everyday conversation. We're all feeling it. Let's get together to work out what to do with it. I'm Jennifer Cox.
I'm Salima Saxton.
And I'm Jane Green.
Well, women, what's made you angry this week?
I've had an angry thing. I definitely get angry when I'm tired, and I've definitely felt quite tired this week. So thinking my husband was going to be home much earlier to help me when we were having people over for supper, and he sailed in like 5 minutes before, and I was completely overwhelmed and lost my shit. Anyway, so that's what's made me
well, it's interesting, that. Actually, because it chimes with what's really gotten under my skin this week, which is being taken for granted. And I mean, there are so many things that I am absolutely fuming about that I can't talk about, but I can say I feel it on behalf of womankind, because I just think being a woman is being taken for granted. And, you know, no matter what way you cut it, it comes out the same. And this woman told me this week about how she was in a meeting room full of men, and somebody said, oh, we haven't got the coffee, and they all turned to her.
Oh no.
I mean, classique. Anyway, Salima, what about you?
Well, mine is probably more directed at myself this week, or the kind of amorphous shape-shifting energy that is currently my ambition, which oscillates really wildly at the moment between something resembling, I don't know if you all know these people, Jane, a Teletubby.
Yes.
Or kind of, yes, a Teletubby. Or then like Tony Montana, which, sorry, that metaphor only works if you are a fan of Scarface and the Teletubbies. But basically, it's a small demographic, a very small demographic.
That Venn diagram.
So it's that ambition post, you know, post, you know, intense mothering. It's a bit like being at a party, I kind of think. I was saying this to a friend earlier, where a song comes on and you think, oh my God, I can really dance, because it's the kind of music that you can really dance to. You're like, I'm a great dancer. And then another song comes on and you can't really get the beat, and you're like, oh, yeah, I can't dance. That's kind of how I feel with my ambition at the moment. So it's like, stop, start, stop, start. Am I ambitious? No, I'm not at all. Should I go to bed all day? No, I should work really hard. Do I really want this? No, I don't at all. So my anger is quite inward at the moment, but I'm hoping it will shift. So that's where I am.
I think the ambition question is really interesting. And as a woman of a certain age, I'm... In some ways, I still feel so driven, but I also wonder whether the part of me that wants to stay in bed all day, which is very much of me at the moment, is also just connected to aging, actually, aging and just getting more tired and menopause. And I don't know. I mean, I think as we approach kind of the midway point, our priorities definitely shift.
Yes. Jane, we're not going to let you stay in bed all day.
We're certainly not. Now, on that note, I'm going to introduce our guest, if you don't mind. So she's been one of my most favourite stand-ups for a very long time. And that's before I even found out that I'd grown up with her. More on that in a minute. Her name is Esther Manito. She's a British Lebanese comedian who you may well have seen on Live at the Apollo, Comedy Central, or you might have seen one of her live shows. Touring all over the UK this summer, starting off in Soho Theatre in London with a very aptly named for us anyway, show called Hell Hath No Fury. So I'd love you to please welcome Esther Manito.
Hi. Hi, Esther.
Hi, Esther.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I was just telling the guys that you're one of my most favourite stand-ups, but you were before I even knew that we had grown up together in Saffron Walden.
That's so mental.
And also, I have to just say to the others that so Esther's of Lebanese descent, and my mum's Pakistani, and basically my mum would always point out Esther's family to me because. In a kind of nudging way.
There was no Waitrose. There was no ethnic minorities.
No, exactly. So my mum would always go, look, to Esther's Esther's older sisters in particular, actually, who I did Amdram with. But so that's how I knew, Esther's younger than me. So that's how I knew of Esther, because of my mummy kind of nudging me, going, look at the brown people.
Weird. I know, growing up now, like with my kids now, you just think, God, it's so different to how it was when we were growing up.
I know.
It was awful.
Because you're not in the middle of the countryside now, Esther.
No, I'm in East London now.
But also, you do this lovely bit that I was watching on YouTube about your parents and about growing up. And it's a very funny thing about how, you know, when your mother says, wait till your father gets home, and, you know, your father gets home and doesn't need to know anything, doesn't need to know whether or not you actually did anything, but beats the shit out of you because your mother is telling him to. And it sort of made me laugh a lot, because it was very different having children then. Yeah. But anyway, I can't remember why I even brought that up. But can you tell us about why your show and Hell Hath No Fury and where that comes from?
It's obviously so relevant to us.
Yes, please.
I know. I'm so excited that you're doing this podcast, because it's making me angry that you're not allowed to be angry. It started out because I kept getting in reviews. So my last show was #NotAllMen. And that was from when I put a tweet out about a guy masturbating on the tube. A really angry man was like, seething that I'd put this tweet out, and he wrote #NotAllMen, and I was like, well, that's just not really an argument. So I was like, yeah, not all men, but not any women though, so why do you get praise for some of you not doing it, but we don't get any praise for the fact that none of us are getting on the tube? And, you know,
some of them are managing to not masturbate on the tube. Let's celebrate.
I started thinking about it from the other side, and I was like, whilst it's very frustrating for women, it's so patronising to men. And the more we patronise blokes and just constantly go, oh, they're just so amazing.
Yeah, we don't expect very much from them.
I know, it's really offensive.
Low standards.
So I started kind of ranting in my show, #NotAllMen, about this issue. And then I noticed that the word angry kept popping up. People go, oh, she's such an angry woman, and she's so fiery, and she's so feisty. And I was like, no, hang on a minute. It's been opinionated.
And do you think passionate? I would say passionate, no?
I don't get called passionate. I feel passionate.
You should get called passionate. Why are they calling it angry?
So listen, can we outline this? Because we normally always start off actually by saying, Esther Manito, what makes you angry? So I would love to know.
Oh,
Esther.
God, sorry. Yes, got that.
Come on. What makes you angry?
Oh, my God. everything. But I feel like it's just, I feel like since having kids and the household, I feel like there is just this endless annoyance with the fact that it's considered my job. So this is just your job. So if you talk about it in stand-up and you want to slag off your kids, you're out of order, because that's your job. Like men, if a man wants to stand on stage and slag off his wife and kids, well, that's, you know, men being men, and, you know, we don't expect much of them anyway, so it's all very funny and very quirky. Whereas when a woman stands up on stage and goes, oh my fucking Christ, you know, these are the whole reasons why I really want to blow my brains out when I hear the sound of one of those YouTube annoying little, here's Liz, you know, those YouTube channels where they unopen toys.
Oh, Kinder Egg.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God, the unboxing video.
The unboxing.
I love that it actually has a term, like it's a real thing that we
and
should
your
all
kids
take
just watch
seriously.
It like,
no, and my children started reenacting it, and I had to that one. I was like, what's happening in here? Oh, we're reenacting unboxing.
But if you say that, then you're a bad mother. And the worst image to ever have is an angry mum.
Gosh, but I think we're all bad mothers, aren't we? I mean, we talked before on the podcast, but it just, and especially when you talked about your parents and how you grew up, and it just made me think about how so many of us grew up. I mean, our parents were just not involved. They weren't helicopter parents. They were holiday parents. I don't know. They just weren't around. They left us to our own devices, other than when they had to beat us up. But
I don't know, but remember, I've got a Pakistani mother, so mine was very involved.
Oh, was she? Oh, my parents were completely not involved.
Yeah, I remember you saying.
But I wonder today, I think that there's so much anger because we're expected to do it all, and we're expected to sort of balance it with this
And not lose our temper.
And the truth is, I think it's just too much. I mean, it's completely overwhelming.
Go
on, sorry, Esther.
I was coming home from a gig, and a guy decided he did that thing that's always really pleasant, where he just sat opposite, just going, oi, 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 for about 5 minutes. And I was on the phone with a friend of mine, and I lost my rag after about 5 minutes and went, fuck off. And everyone turned around and looked at me. And I was like, yes. None of you have looked at the fact that this man has literally just poked in my face because he's drunk and he wants my attention for nearly 5 minutes now. But when I tell him to fuck off, it's like, And he was almost like offended. He was like, oh.
It speaks.
Yeah. But that brings us very nicely to how do you tend to express your anger, Esther?
Oh, massively through stand-up. And right. I used to be very apologetic for it. I used to feel offended when I got called angry. I used to feel hurt. I used to feel this flush of red humiliation, you know, where it churns in your gut and it creeps up your face. And I couldn't articulate why I felt what it felt, that reaction. And I realized it was shame, because it meant I'm not girly. I'm not feminine. I'm not what a woman should be. And it took me talking to a therapist, it took me kind of really going, it's okay to be yourself. That's fine. And if you want to stand on stage and you feel comfortable ranting about all the shitty little things that go on in your day, and that's what you want to do in a sphere where many other comedians have done exactly the same, but the difference is they are male, then this is the path of change you got to be on. And it may be a rough road, but it'll be better for the ones coming up behind us. But I'm just like...
And also, it's amazing for the audience, because the relief that a woman feels hearing these kind of things, hearing what you talk about on stage, is enormous.
And you will get women that relate to it, but I cannot tell you the amount of times that women will come up and go, I loved it. My husband didn't. And I'm like, I would be so shocked if my husband ever went up to a comedian and went, I loved you, but she didn't. It'd be like, why does anyone care about that? Like, yeah. We're too valid. But there's still that thing of like,
we're pandering to them. Yeah. We're looking after them. We're taking care. They can't handle it.
Also, we're very used to the narrative, I think.
Very used to the narrative. But also, I think people are often more comfortable when women are behaving like Blue Peter presenters. You know, I definitely went through a phase in my 30s where I thought that's the way I should basically be, a Blue Peter presenter. In fact, that was my secret ambition in my 20s. But like, I thought then that way the world would respond to me well if I feigned enthusiasm.
Well, it probably would have. That's the depressing thing.
No, sure. But so recently that I've being brave enough to go, no, I'm not just that. I do have that aspect to me, definitely. You know, I'm not like a T-bird. Well, you know, like the T-birds in Greece. You know, I'm a nerd.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, I've got other aspects.
I didn't make that connection straight away.
That took me a while. Esther, do you think it's the act of writing that processes the anger for you? Do you, like, if there's a situation that makes you angry, do you sort of come home and start thinking about turning it into a skit? And is it that, do you think, that has helped, or where does the catharsis come from?
Yeah, it is, but yeah, exactly, spot on. I literally, the little things that happen in your day to day where you just go, this is ridiculous. This is what a ridiculous scenario. Like, how are you supposed to just exist in this? And then you go home and you jot down it, you know, in a few bullet points, and then you can talk about it on stage and see how it develops. But it definitely, yeah, it's definitely just really cathartic just getting that stuff out on stage.
Has there been a time that you would identify as your angriest?
What do you mean? Is there one specific time?
Mm. Or a period,
of your life, yeah.
Period of my life, which would be my when I was at my angriest. I think when you're particularly sleep deprived, when you have children, but then you're too tired to be angry. You just fantasize about being, you know, hit by a car so you can have a few days in hospital. That was my fantasy.
Or jail. Mm. I always thought a kind of crime that I'd done by mistake, and then they'd
let you out. But yes, or just like an open
prison, a nice open prison. I kind of romanticized, and I also used to romanticize about post cesareans, how I had a catheter to my husband, and Carl used to say, "Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a great time, Slima, but I used to go." But I remember those couple of days,
a kind of morphine haze,
yeah,
and never having to get out of bed. That sounds quite
Also, I think these days, if someone brings you a cup of tea, it's sort of equivalent to a spa, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very exciting. Really, I think just having a shower alone, going for a slash in peace,
yeah.
So definitely, I felt angry, but I think it was more just tired exasperation. But definitely, I think in my early 20s, livid. But the added thing to that is that I think that was because that was when we were at the peak of kind of like ladette culture, and I didn't identify really with that in the 90s. I was frustrated that was the only feminism we were given. It was like, don't say feminism because that's a real dirty word, but what you can do is you can get your tits out and identify as a ladette, and then that's really cool.
And drink a lot of beer.
Drink a lot of beer and put yourself in a lot of really vulnerable situations.
Mm. Yes.
Don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. That makes me angry. So then you got labelled as angry because you had this frustration, and you know, especially when you're younger and you have the kind of energy and the time, the social space with friends to debate and argue and you have boyfriends that you clash with and all the rest of it. But it just felt like I was on this constant rage of why I didn't feel that any of this particularly kind of ticked any boxes of representation of my kind of intellectual thought space. Mm-hmm. So that was probably my angriest time, and I remember I used to get called angry quite a lot then.
By whom?
By everyone. It'd be by friends, you know, be like, you know, she's a very angry person. I remember even lecturers would be like, oh, you get so angry,
why, what are you doing?
You're shouting at the
lecture theatre.
Just put your hand up and kind of answer a question.
Okay. And Esther, can I ask, I always have to drag everybody back to their childhoods, but were you raised in a household where there was quite a lot of anger?
I can answer that, because I know her family.
So would it depend on who was listening? It's like sometimes on Instagram, I hide my story from my mother. So I understand whether you might not be able to answer that, that's okay, but I think that those of us who grew up in very angry households, even though we vow on our lives this was never going to be us, we will never do this to our children, unfortunately, because that's what was modeled for us, that because I also was very much defined as angry when I was young. Now anger is just not part of my life anymore, very, very infrequently. But when I was young, it was the only way I knew to portray anxiety or fear or unhappiness. My go-to was always anger.
I think, yeah, I totally, totally relate to that. And also it's a way of getting heard. Like, you have to shout and scream. If everyone else is shouting and screaming, you've got to shout and scream the loudest. But I think there's a difference between expression and rage. Like, I'm not angry in my house. We're a loud house in the in the sense of that we're just loud people, but I wouldn't storm around the house shouting, screaming, slamming doors and kicking off. I very much use stand up as my space to do that.
Well, I love that joke that you've got about your mum and dad. The one thing they had in common was violence.
But also your family of origin was a really politically active family, or as you know from me remembering about your sister telling me about the Guildford Boar, I remember all the CND, Don't Test on Animals, Badgets, Amnesty. I think I met one of your sisters at a local Amnesty meeting.
Yeah, they were all Everyone was very active, weren't they?
Yeah, it was apart from me. Yeah, you weren't there.
Well, you are now.
But your
this is your time.
But your big sisters, and your, I think it was your mum, right? It was all infused with a politically active anger.
Yes.
It was channeled into a great way.
Yes. And I kind of opted out of that.
Right. And yeah, that's why I didn't know you then.
Yeah, it was always like, you know, I was kind of mocked a little bit by my sisters in that sense. It was just like, oh, Esther, she's just a bit of a kind of like slaggy chav that just wants to go and drink Cinzano down the railway. Do you remember the railway bell?
Yeah, but you see, I was doing Amdram. I was with your sisters in Pirates of the Penzance.
I was getting felt up in the railway bell.
And yeah, we grew up together, but we were different as kids.
Different worlds.
I was never hugely political. But I think the one thing that I assume...
Are you now?
No, but I'm very, I think about gender.
I think you
gender,
are.
Gender
you
roles, are yeah. Very, very strong. I feel very opinionated about gender roles, particularly in the kind of like heteronormative domestic household, and how we're kind of given this pretense of equality and it just really isn't. And that's fine. But also I do feel quite strongly about how little we expect of men and how patronising we are. And I find that that's been really problematic as well. So that's kind of been the main features of my last two shows. So I guess in that sense, I've become a lot more opinionated, definitely.
It's so refreshing that you're speaking up about this stuff, because I think so much of it has gone underground. I think what you said about the Ladette thing is spot on, that there was this kind of faux emancipation, we can be like boys, there's no difference, blah blah, and I think that did us a massive disservice, because it meant that we sort of, you know, you lose your voice. There's lots of shouting, but you're not being heard. And I just don't think we've really refound it, to be honest, despite, you know, everyone telling us we have.
I know, we're equal now, so it's fine. So
shush, lady, get back indoors.
So Esther, in moments post Fury, what do you do to be calm?
Well, weirdly, do you know what though? I used to feel such frustration when my kids were probably, because I started stand up when my little boy was 5 months and my daughter was 2. So I was pretty sleep deprived and I was going pretty insane anyway. But I do remember before that, I would just feel these, like, you know, when you know, your toddler's having a meltdown, you've had no sleep because you've got a little baby and it's just like, ugh. And I did have those moments of like, you're going in your cot, you're going in the playpen. I just have to go and stand outside in the garden and, you know, just take a few deep breaths before I kind of lose my mind. And then when I started doing stand up, I realized that I was so calm in the house, and I realized it's like, you need to have a release. You need to, and lovely. Whatever that may be, it can be, you know, whether you go and do yoga, whether you go and run, whether you go and sing
scream.
In a band, whether you go and scream, yeah, whether you go and do kickboxing, but you can't just endure all the time just what are my needs from everyone else, and you're just juggling. And I see, you know, you see other people at the school gates and they're just like constant to-do lists and they'll just voice it at you as if it's a conversation. You're just like, hey, how are you doing? And they're like, yeah, well, now I just need to go to the supermarket and then I just need to get that and then I need to sew his badges on. And you're just like, okay, this is just, you've got to have an outlet.
So that I remember reading years ago, and it was an interview with some very successful woman, and I wish I could remember who it was, but she effectively said that because they said to her, how can you do all of this? How can you do all of what you do? And she said, I make sure that my day is punctuated with periods of peacefulness. So whatever it is that I have going on, I carve out time for myself where I get to just be, and it's just me. And I think so often we forget to do that. And I know that the days when I lose my shit are the days when I have not done that, always.
And I think that can be something as like literally scrolling manically through Instagram for 3 minutes, or like eating a biscuit around,
staring out of a window.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be something big, does it? It can just be something tiny, in using that advice.
I think it can be something tiny. And I think the key is it needs to be you need to be by yourself, and it needs right. whatever it is that you're doing. And I do often think about that kind of doom scrolling on Instagram, because
mm-hmm. that's not a good one, is it? Yeah.
Well, I think what that is disassociative. Oops. Or dissociative. Yeah. I think that
But then you just look at everyone else just going, well, everyone else has just got brilliant lives, so yeah. I'm just a piece of shit.
Yeah.
That's
terrible advice from me. It's because I came off it for so long, and then I came back and I'm like, this is the new me. I can deal with this totally brilliantly, and I still deal with it.
It sends you loopy. And then they send you all the adverts. And I get sent some very weird adverts, but then I start scrolling through those videos, and before you know it, I've bought
it's
my shower.
Jane, don't you buy things from Instagram? I mean, I don't, but
I'm the worst.
Bloody time. Yeah. And they also know that I am the unofficial I'm the unofficial caftan queen of Connecticut.
Oh, yes, I
remember. And so caftans pop up on my feed every bloody day. And sometimes I've sort of bought them without even realizing that I've done it.
No.
But I try and catch myself now. Like, I put it in the cart. And then I think, I'm not going to buy it. I'm just going to leave it there, and I'm going to think about it. And generally, that whatever that, that urge. It's addiction. I want the dopamine release of buying.
I just find it an unusual place. It's an unusual place. I feel like it's buying something from like a really old,
But this is how the world has changed, that everybody's got their own business doing like fashion, jewelry, whatever. And the way they sell is through Instagram ads.
On that note, I love that yours is caftans.
What do you buy, Esther?
I kind of pick up on what you talk about and stuff. So I seem to constantly have endless shitty gadgets for the house. So everyone's just listen to me ranting or like talking about, oh, I wish this was better or whatever. And
she'll feel better if she gets a Magimix.
Yeah, she just needs a good electric cleaner for a grouter.
Whatever.
That's like
any of it.
It is amazing how we really have as a society, we have no privacy anymore at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's just none.
Surveilled.
I mean, we're just, everything is being listened to, and just that thing where you can bring up, like you just said, Magimix. I would not be surprised if the next time I look at my phone, there's an ad for a Magimix on.
You know that if you talk about suicide, the Samaritans calls you.
What?
Yes.
Really? On Instagram.
And on that note, we really are wrapping up. Okay, yes. Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
We're coming to your show. I'm going to make Jane fly over. But
yes, I'm over for a bit in June, so hopefully I can come and see it. We tend to focus on what's making us angry and all the kind of the hardships of being us in the world today. But what are the good things? What makes you happy?
I like running in the forest. That's my thing that I've done now for about a year.
Lovely.
And I do it obsessively, and I go a bit antsy if I can't just suddenly get, because there is nothing better than just running.
Do you feel safe as a woman running in a forest?
Do you know what? I didn't really think about it until a lot of other women went, we would never run down here, when I was like going, come on, we'll go on this trail. And they're like, I hope you don't do this by yourself. And I just, then one day I got lost and it was like snowy grey weather. And I was just like, battered. So that's how I relax. Just a good old
that sounds really relaxing. / Grimm's fairy tale.
I might just buy you like a heated blanket or something instead and set you up in my spare room.
Keep us safe.
As like a mum, I'd feel much better if you did that.
Is your home life that you're literally running away from serial killers in the woods? What?
That's better. That's more fun. Thank you so much, Esther.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Esther.
Absolutely.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely. Esther, yeah. Lovely meeting you all.
Bye. By the way, do you know that that's apparently an English thing? Well, my husband says nobody here does it. He says whenever I talk to friends or family in England, by the time, like when the call is over or when I've decided it's over, I go, bye, bye. Like the voice gets
up,
high.
Up, up. Yes, because we're also constricted and we're not able to actually go like Americans. I have
they
to
just
go,
hang up, don't they?
End. British. No end. Oh God, I've got to tell them. I've got to tell them. I've got to go. It's over. But how do I say it? Yes, the British Reserve.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.